Good afternoon. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today's Wednesday, April 3rd. Let the record reflect the time is 1:30 today, 1:32 p.m. Today we have President Senator Michicki, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes, Senator Senator Schauer, and Senator Michicki is on his way. He had another commitment. And I also want to just express condolences. Vice Chair Senator Reinbold's brother has passed away, so she won't be with us. I'd like to remind committee members and those in the audience to silence or turn off your cell phones. Thank you to those assisting us. We have one item on the agenda. We will be receiving an introduction to Senate Joint Resolution for Constitutional Amendment, State Tax Initiative, which is sponsored by the governor. We'll have an initial introduction from the administration and go through a sectional analysis. Let's keep our questions and comments focused, and concise questions and thoughtful brevity are the order of the day as always. So let us now take up the resolution, SJR 4. Mr. Milk from the Department of Law, Mr. Mike Barnhill from the Office of Management and Budget, please come to the table. Gentlemen, welcome. Please place your names on the record. Begin your introduction.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Mike Barnhill, Policy Director, Office of Management and Budget.
And good afternoon. Bill Milk, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for your consideration today of CS for SJR 4. This is one of three proposed constitutional amendments that the governor has submitted for the legislature's consideration. This one deals with requiring any new tax or increase in the rate of tax to be approved by both the legislature and the people. The other two resolutions have to do with limiting state spending. That's SJR 6. The committee has heard that. And SJR 5, which requires any changes to the permanent fund dividend a formula to be approved by the people. Together, these three resolutions form a foundational piece of Governor Dunleavy's proposal to the legislature and to the people to restore the state to a path of fiscal stability and to restrain state spending. This particular proposal, Madam Chair, is an amendment to Article 9, Section 1 of the Alaska Constitution. And what I want to emphasize for the committee is that the pieces involved here already exist in the Constitution. So if the legislature establishes a new tax through legislation or increases the rate of a tax through legislation, the people currently have the power through the referendum process to consider that and overturn the legislature's determination. Conversely, if the people initiate a tax measure, the legislature in 2 years has the ability to overturn that decision as well. So these pieces exist now. What this resolution does, Madam Chair, is essentially make them more efficient so that it happens automatically. If the legislature establishes a tax or increases the rate of a tax, then the people automatically have the right to consider that at a statewide election without having to go through the mechanics of gathering signatures and putting it on the ballot. Conversely, the legislature can consider an initiated tax law, but it has to wait 2 years before it could overturn that. And this brings that closer in time so that in order for that initiated tax law to take effect, the legislature would have to approve it. So that's really it in a nutshell. It's logistically simpler than SJR 6, the spending limit. And happy to answer questions and as well as turn it over to Mr. Milks for the sectional analysis. Before I do that, however, just some policy background on the origin and the inspiration of this resolution. In 1992, the state of Colorado, through ballot initiative, amended their constitution to require something very similar to this, and that's called the tax, popularly known as the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. And that also requires the vote of the people for any establishment or increase to the rate of tax, both at the state and the local level. I'm aware of three other states that have done similar things. So the state of Washington, just for local property taxes, amended their constitution to require a three-fifths vote of a municipality if the property tax was increased to more than 1%. The state of California also amended their constitution in 1996 to require a vote of the people, again, at the local level, for any increase in taxes or fees. And then finally, the state of Missouri amended their constitution. If the state enacted a tax increase in excess of $50 million or 1% of state revenues, requiring a vote of the people. So there's examples elsewhere, beginning in 1992 and coming forward, of similar similar efforts to amend the Constitution.
Okay. Before we take questions and general questions, I think, Mr. Milks, if you could go through the section analysis for us, and we'll get that taken care of.
Sure, Madam Chair. Bill Milks, again, with the Department of Law. So the resolution we go through, we have Section 1, and actually now I'm looking at our sectional. Looks like we have a typo here, but anyway, if I could just clear that up. Section 1 is actually, because we are going to break the current Article 9, Section 1 into subsections, Section 1 is just setting out that the existing provision in the Constitution regarding the taxing power will now be subsection A. Then we move along from there. Section 2 encompasses the key changes that Mr. Barnhill has described, which is a process by which either a law enacted by the legislature that would establish a state tax or increase the rate of an existing tax shall not take effect unless approved by the voters. That's in Section 2, that would be the new B in the Constitution. And then conversely, we have subsection C, which sets out the process by which the voters could, through the initiative process, establish a state tax or increase the rate of an existing tax. And that decision or action, again, this time would be subject to approval by the legislature through a resolution at the next session of the regular session of the legislature. Section 3, Section 3 simply is providing a conforming change to the initiative process, constitutional process, to provide that, except as provided in this taxation article, an initiative becomes law 90 days after certification. Because, of course, in this taxation article, we're creating a process by which the voters can, by initiative, establish a tax or increase the rate of a tax, but it will be subject to the legislature's consideration. And then Section 4 is just the provision requiring that the amendment be on the ballot at the next general election.
Okay, thank you. One of the things that when you if a new tax were to be established, it would take a bit of time for the administration to set that up. So that makes me have a question regarding the effective dates, because it looks like we're talking 90 days, and that might, at the end of a session or after a November election, if it were the initiative process, that would put the start date of a tax at an odd time and also not give the preparation time for the administration. So would the administration be amenable to making a change that would make the effective date the January 1st of the following fiscal year? Would that work for both the initiative and the legislative process?
Madam Chair, I think this is an intriguing proposal, and we'll take that back and get back to the committee. I think from a policy and administration perspective, making a new tax effective on January 1st makes sense. Most taxes run on calendar year timelines, but I don't have authority to say, yes, the administration approves that today.
And if I could follow up.
Mr. Milks?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I understand the issue raised by the chair. This proposed amendment addresses that issue for the one way in which a tax would be established, which is the legislature passes a law establishing a new tax or rate increase, and then the voters approve, and in subsection B, it provides that the that law would take effect 90 days after the election was certified or on a special effective date concurred in by the legislature. But I understand your point, I think, is that on the second way in which a tax could be implemented, a similar provision is not included. I do think probably the legislature in that circumstance could probably pass a bill changing the effective date, but I think your point of having some consistency throughout, that it would be the following fiscal year for tax certainty, certainly.
Well, we'll let the administration chew on that and let us know. I think a clean, consistent way might be a good way to go. Now that we're through the general overview and the sectional, now we'll open up to other questions that members may have. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we're on the effective dates, I guess that wasn't clear to me, reading this proposed language, whether a bill that starts with the legislature and then goes through the voter approval process, does the legislature have another crack at the effective date afterwards? You have a new legislature, you followed a general election. This simply says, or an effective date provided for by concurrence of two-thirds of the membership of each house. So could that happen after the vote as well, the popular vote?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I don't – well, let me look exactly at the language again.
We'll take
Madam Chair, we can add that to a list of
back on the record.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Keel. Now we think it's the law that was passed by the legislature on changing or increasing the rate of tax. At that time, the legislature would make the decision whether or not to have a different effective date.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, I suggest that the language isn't crystal clear, as the lawyerly confab maybe suggests. So that might be a place to look a little further. And then, is there any provision for the legislature to provide an effective date in its during its approval process of an initiated law, provide for change? There's not an explicit provision, so it's not clear to me whether that's intended, and I think this comes back to the chair's question earlier.
But before you answer that, can you tell us how it works now for the initiative process as far as effective date, and then what Senator Keel is asking? Just, I'm realizing I'm a little confused the way it is now.
The initiative process is under Article 11, Section 5, Article 11, and then the effective date provision on an initiative is in Section 6, and it provides that an initiative law becomes effective 90 days after certification.
Okay, thank you. And you want to repeat your question, Senator Keel?
So the question, Madam Chair, is whether there's whether the for an initiated tax, we've had a couple of them. The legislature in this new oversight role of the voters here could adjust that effective date in its resolution saying yes or no.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, if the legislature's proposing the tax law change under this CS for the amendment, the legislature could, by two-thirds vote, set another effective date. The process by which the initiative goes first, the legislature then, the tax shall not take effect unless the legislature, by a resolution, approves the initiated law by a majority vote in joint session before the adjournment of the next regular session. If approved by the legislature, the initiative law becomes effective 90 days after approval. So I think that circles us back to the question that the chair has raised about whether or not there could be further clarity on that through a following fiscal year effective date.
So in follow-up to Senator Keel's question, though, the way this is written, an initiated law, the legislature could not change the effective date. It simply is 90 days after approval if it's approved, correct?
Through the chair, that's how I see it.
Yes. Okay. Senator Keel, did you have go ahead.
On additional topics?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So looking at the last couple times that Alaska's voters used the initiative process and increased or created taxes, it actually got me thinking in the other direction. If the legislature were to do what the voters have done a couple of times, significant pieces of legislation that make some regulatory changes, make some statutory changes about the operation or existence of a legal industry, and includes a tax, what part goes to the voters for approval? The whole thing? Just the tax piece? What's the interaction with the legislature's powers?
Well, through the chair, Senator Keel, you said there's a tax piece, right? So if this under this amendment, if the voters seek, if the legislature seeks to change or increase a tax, that goes to the, and approves such a law, that goes to the voters. Now, you had a compound question there. I think then you talked about another kind of public policy initiative in addition to a tax.
Perhaps you might just want to refer to the marijuana initiative. I think that sure. He's talking about. So there was a lot more involved in that initiative than just the tax piece. So how would that, if this had been in place, how would that have worked with the marijuana initiative?
But, Madam Chair, my question specifically was, had the legislature passed it?
Okay. Actually, go both directions on it, too.
Through the chair, if the legislature had passed a marijuana tax, that would go to the voters according to the terms of this amendment. And the approval would be pursuant to the voters' decision.
Madam Chair, I apologize that I'm not being clear. If the text of the initiative that passed in 2012, the marijuana initiative, losing the year, 14?
More recent than that, but.
Maybe 14. Had the text of that initiative, which included changes to our criminal statutes, changes to creating a new title dealing with marijuana regulation, and also, among other things, included a tax. Assume for the moment that that had been House Bill 100, and the governor signed it. On what would the voters vote? The whole kit and caboodle? Just the tax. I'm reading this proposed language and I can't figure it out.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the tax is what the voters would vote on through this amendment. The legislature continues to be the lawmaking body, but if there's a new tax, then the voters will have the ability to weigh in and just give their approval or not, but not the other other issues identified by the in the scenario you described.
So, Madam Chair, when the proposed language says the law shall not take effect, what it really means is a portion of the law shall not take effect. Why the choice of this language?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I think Mr. Barnhill, I mean, the subject of this resolution, constitutional resolution, is taxes. So a law that would increase or change taxes shall not take effect unless the voters approve.
Is it correct? I hope you don't mind, Senator Keel, just because I'm curious about this, too. So if you went back to the marijuana initiative, so we weren't really passing one law. We were passing multiple laws. So it would be the tax law specifically. Now, if we go the other direction, it's not House Bill 100, but it is an initiative by the people like it actually was, the legislature then would be just approving or disapproving just the tax piece then in that following session. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Senator Schauer, did you have a question?
That's
it. Senator Keel.
So, Madam Chair, I appreciate the clarification. When I read a law enacted this way shall not take effect, I did not read it to mean the sections and subsections of a law enacted this way, but the entire thing. So that's a, I guess, an oddity of the language. The next question would be, the previous time that the voters went to the polls and created a couple of taxes, which was the cruise ship initiative, they created both a head tax and a gambling tax. Would the legislature vote on those separately, together? Would it be at the legislature's discretion? How would that work?
And I'm sure I know my colleagues wanted to weigh in on something.
Mr. Barnhill.
Madam Chair, if I could just maybe add a thought that might help Senator Keel on his previous question. I think if the resolution was phrased in terms of bill, his concern would be well taken, because a bill contains multiple laws. In this case, in the marijuana initiative, the bill had laws enacting criminal provisions, enacting tax provisions, enacting other things. This only governs the law that is specific to establishing or increasing a tax. If a voter initiative has multiple legal provisions, one of which establishes criminal provisions, this doesn't govern that. So I think actually the language is quite clear the way it's phrase, but if it said bill, then that would be a concern we should address.
Well, actually, I have a question about that, and I guess it's for Department of Law. If I have a bill that's touching on multiple things, am I passing a law or am I passing a group of laws?
And Madam Chair, I might point to the language of Article 2, Section 14, the second sentence. No bill may become law until it has passed three readings, et cetera.
Yes. Through the chair, or in response to the chair. A bill can include various changes in law as long as it meets single subject rule requirement. So it can affect different parts of Alaska's code. But a constitutional amendment that refers to a law that would enact a state tax or increase the tax is addressing that subject, that issue, a tax or increasing the tax. So I think that that's based on the writing here, and I think a common understanding, that's the intent of this provision, is to put one subset of the various kinds of public policies that could be addressed by the legislature through a bill on a general topic. It's the tax change that goes to the voters. And I think that's the intent of this provision. And I think, you know, when we look at constitutional provisions and how they're interpreted by the Alaska Supreme Court, they're doing a common plain understanding of what was the intent expressed and how would it be understood. And so, just to be clear, we're talking about a change in tax law, either a new tax or a change in the tax rate.
And I know it's a bit of semantics, but because it's been part of the discussion, when we say something becomes the law, we're saying something becomes the law of the land. It's codified, and a bill that becomes law is becoming a law of the land, and it could contain multiple laws, multiple features, and So I think that's important to get on the record, just in this conversation. Okay, other topics, or do you still have more on that one?
Madam Chair, did I miss a response to the question of multiple taxes and one initiated law and how the legislature votes on those?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that back up. I don't think we got that answer, so there be.
Through the chair, Senator Kiyos, I understand the question. You're talking about an initiative that would enact multiple tax laws?
Right, and I just point to the cruise ship initiative as a recent example.
Well, I think the legislature would have to approve through a joint resolution each of those taxes. The resolution refers to a state tax or increasing the rate of an existing tax. So if you had two taxes on the ballot for two different subjects, they were approved by the voters, the legislature under, I think, an interpretation of this would have to approve each one.
And so just following up on that, who prepares that resolution and what sort is it?
Through the chair, you're referring to the resolution that the legislature would have to create and approve to approve a tax by the, I would imagine that would be, this would be a role of the legislature to act, so the legislature's council would probably be the ones that would create the resolution.
And Madam Chair, the Constitution sets out a number of forms of resolution in its article on the legislature. What form of resolution would this be? And I ask for substantive reasons. I ask because I'm curious as to whether it would be subject to three readings or under our rules subject to hearings and substantive committees. It's not clear to me what the governor wants the legislature to do here second guessing the voters. So I'm curious about how this is supposed to work.
Well, I think again, we'd be applying the constitutional language, which refers to shall not take effect unless the legislature by resolution approves the initiated law. So I think the legislature's rules may or may not be, they'd have to comply with this. There'd have to be a resolution presented, which would mean the legislature would have the opportunity to vote on this specific subject. Now, as far as what it would look like, you know, we do have somewhat similar process on executive orders, that the governor can issue an executive order, and under Article 3, Section 23, unless disapproved by a resolution by the majority of the members of the meeting in joint session, that executive order becomes law. So that would probably be something that legislative council would look at as a good guide. But I think what would be intended here, if approved by the voters, plain and ordinary understanding would be, there'd be a resolution before the legislature, in your example, tax A, to approve the action of the voters or not approve the action of the voters.
And Madam
Senator Keel?
So then I'm just kind of looking, I think you give a great example where the Constitution assumes that the governor, using his executive power, has that power. The legislature has to act to stop that. So in this constitutional amendment, which assumes the voters don't necessarily know what they're doing when they use their power of initiative, they need a check by the legislature. Are the voters entitled to a vote in joint session, or is that subject to caucus politics, whether we have that joint session at all?
Well, through the chair, the proposed language says that the law shall not take effect unless the legislature by resolution approves the initiated law by a majority vote in joint session for the adjournment of the next regular session. And certainly the intent of the drafters of this constitutional amendment is that that is a mandatory action by the legislature to consider that law.
I'm looking at it, Mr. Milks, and it looks like it would be mandatory for there to be a joint session if the intention was to approve the people's initiative. If they were not intending to approve it, it doesn't seem like they would need to hold the joint session. Am I reading that correctly?
Madam Chair, I do think you're reading that correctly. Now that I look at the language in the resolution, it shall not take effect unless the legislature by resolution approves the initiated law by a majority vote in joint session before the adjournment of the next regular session.
Is that the administration's intent? Or was the intent that there would always be an up or down vote held by the legislature?
Could we take an at-ease so we can consult?
Sure, at-ease. Back on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. After consultation, it was the intent of the drafters, the administration drafters of this, to leave the decision whether to consider a resolution in joint session approving the voters' action a matter of discretion for the legislature. So if they choose not to take it up at all, then the tax will not come into effect, and that's within the discretion of the legislature.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that's an issue of real concern for me. I have no idea what the rules are this time, but in previous legislatures, I have seen majority coalitions or caucuses that have had a majority of the majority rule before they act. And so that's a situation where six senators could say, we're not going to take this up, practically speaking. And so you could have something passed by a great majority of Alaska voters and have half a dozen members of the legislature, six out of 60, stop it from happening. So that structurally, that is worrisome to me as a constitutional thing in terms of the voters. But moving on from that, I guess I have some questions much more broadly about what is a tax that triggers the definition under that triggers this constitutional language if it were to pass. And I guess it would be helpful to me to know where the administration sees the concepts of user fees set, especially those set by regulation, in invoking this language. What would be the trigger for this process?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, a tax, the intent in drafting this is to look back, is to think of a tax as a charge levied by the government upon the people on property, on the individuals for a public purpose, a forced contribution of wealth to meet the public needs of government. That term I just used was coming back to when the framers passed Article 7, Section 1, and used the word tax. They were utilizing an understanding through the dictionaries of that time of what a tax is. And as opposed to a user fee or a license, which is essentially permission to do something, whether or not it's a license to be a commercial license, to be a hairdresser or some other profession, or it's a fishing license or a hunting license, that that's a kind of user fee. So that's how we understand a tax, and that's sort of then been the guide that we've followed on what is a tax. And so that's those things. So we're talking about, of course, more commonly known, an income tax, a sales tax, that kind of a new tax of that form or increase in the rate would be subject to a vote of the people, not a change in a user fee.
Senator Keel.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. So,
before you ask, though, I want to mention that Senator Michiki had joined us at about 2:01 p.m. I failed to mention that earlier. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think about the division of motor vehicles, which in the aggregate raises, I don't know, 2.5 times what it costs to run the division of motor vehicles. So when we register our cars and get our driver's licenses and our commercial driver's licenses and our endorsements and what have you, is that a fee or a tax?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, when I think of a driver's license or vehicle fee, and that's a fee. It's a permission to engage in some kind of purpose. So I'd say that falls on the user fee side, not a tax subject to this amendment.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. Well, indulge me in the thought experiment. If the legislature passed a bill this year or the year after this amendment goes into effect that doubled all of our fees at the DMV, so we'd be in the neighborhood of 5 times what it costs to administer the program, would that still be a fee, or would we at that point be into the tax regime?
Well, through the chair, Senator Keel, again, the sort of basic guiding principles, I think, is that a tax is an effort to raise revenue for general government spending as opposed to a user fee finance a particular service. So I think the scenario you're describing is, could a particular fee be raised at a level that's so high that the average person might think that's really a tax? I suppose that's conceivable, that is the case, and that could happen. And then, you know, when the courts are looking at this kind of reviewing a constitutional amendment, they're trying to apply the plain understanding of the public. So if you have commercial licensing fees that are sustaining a program within some reasonable range, that's not a tax. But the scenario you're describing is basically, could you create some other thing called a fee and have it at such a rate, 5 times, I think, more than you said, and that the revenue then was really being just used for general government revenue? Well, then arguably one could say that's a tax. But that's, you know, a hypothetical that we appreciate, and certainly the intent here is to follow the traditional understanding of the tax back from when the framers used that word. But you just described a scenario that's pretty different.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're getting into maybe some semantics of a fee or a tax, or we're coming up with ideas and trying to look at different loopholes maybe, and I'm not trying to put words in Senator Keel's mouth other than to say that wasn't really the intent here that we're talking about the generic tax, the dreaded word, the income tax, the sales tax, the flat tax. And we're talking about the Constitution, so we want to stay as simple and succinct. We used to call it C3COM, clear, concise, correct, in my previous life. And I know that perhaps the administration doesn't want to say those words, but I mean, I guess what I'm driving at here is, if we start drilling down and start talking about all kinds of fees and taxes and different things, we're starting to really clutter up the conversation about a change to the Constitution when we really want this to be as simple and as base as you could possibly be. So what are we really talking about here when we start talking about a tax? Is there a further definition? Would it help to define it further? Or would we be making the issue even more complex?
Through the chair, Senator Schauer, it's absolutely the intent of the administration that this be interpreted, tax be interpreted as the common people would understand the word tax. And it's certainly not the intention to make this as complicated as possible. A potential rule of thumb, most taxes in the state of Alaska are put in Title 43. And so that's a great place to start. We could explore infinite number of scenarios and hypotheticals that try to split hairs, but the bottom line is the intention is that this applies to a tax as the people understand the word tax and as the Constitution uses it.
Senator Schauer.
Just a brief follow-up. When you say that, because again, you're on record and people may watch this, what would be, because we have to say in generic terms, I suppose, or what would be the generic answer to what the people would think a tax is? Is there a definition? Is there a precedent that sets when you say that word? So what is that?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Schauer, Mr. Milks gave that definition earlier, and you could restate that.
Yeah.
And before you do, I just want to state something and see if you agree. It might clear things up. The difference between a tax and a fee: a tax is a levy collected to provide for general government services. A fee is a levy collected to provide a service that benefits the group of people from which the money is collected. Is that, clarify it? Would you agree with that? Mr. Milkson, you're free to state a different definition.
Through the chair, I think that basically describes a tax, the difference between a tax and a license fee. And our state constitution already envisions these are different things, because in Article 7, Section 1, we have Article 9, Section 1, we have tax used. And then elsewhere in Section 7, we have tax or license. So, yeah, I think that accurately describes it. And I think back to Senator Schauer's questions, there are kinds of taxes. If it's easier to understand, certainly general income tax, personal income tax, corporate income taxes, sales taxes. I mean, I think it's pretty much that's a tax. Excise taxes. You could have a tax on alcohol, a tax, a fee that you'd pay if you want to obtain a liquor license to run a pub or a bar. So I think that's, and I think back to when Mr. Barnhill, I think, had begun the hearing, he talked about a number of states have these kinds of prohibitions, limitations, restrictions, and they usually use a word like we're using, a tax, establish a tax, or a new tax.
Senator Michicki.
So I think what's clear, which is kind of how I saw it, is that if we want to limit the type of tax that goes that we're referring to in this resolution, we should define it. Because right now it's talking about all taxes. Not fees, not fishing and hunting fees, not DMV fees, but corporate taxes, fuel taxes, fish taxes, alcohol tax, cannabis tax, oil and gas taxes, estate taxes. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. This right now is referring to all of them. And if we want that to be different, we would have to define it differently, which is our right to do as legislators with this bill. So to me, I think it's quite clear, and it's whether or not that's the intent of the administration or not. We have to decide if we want it to stay in this form.
Okay. Good point.
Fair?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It would clear up the questions for sure. Are there any other questions? Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, I guess that there are many, many other questions about the language proposed. And so if it's the will of the committee to revise this to stick to what was described, that may reduce the need to ask some of these other questions, because the language that's here raises dozens. I don't take everybody's time. If the goal is to revise this down to speak about the easy cases, it's the hard cases that land you in court.
Well, at first blush, I certainly am would like to clear the matter and have it straight in there. I don't know if Senator Schauer wants to comment on that. Then I'd like to know if the administration, what you all think of that idea.
No, we can let it. No, just let it continue. It's great discussion.
But as far as clarifying what a tax is in the language, would you be amenable to that?
Yes, I think. I mean, that's something we need to look at. We've started discussing it previously. The second round, I know, with some of the folks on the table for many things this session. So I think it's a discussion we need to have on how we might do that, if it's going to make more sense or not.
Okay. And your response to that, Mr. Barnhill?
Madam Chair, we're happy to engage in discussions with committee members on and off the record about ideas that you have, and just take it from there.
Okay. Are there other questions, then, if we do clarify that definition, something outside of that, Senator Keel, that you had?
Well, Madam Chair, maybe a broad one, and then just sort of a couple of things that were on my mind that maybe we'll invite a response to in writing, if you'd rather. But the broad one wasn't crystal clear to me. I think I know the answer. Was the intent that this apply to political subdivisions of the state as well?
It refers to, through the chair, Senator Keel, a state tax.
And Madam Chair, in other states where it applies at a local level, the Constitution is amended to explicitly provide that it applies only or both at a local level and a state level. So it has doesn't say it there, so it does not.
Okay. Thank
you. Senator Michicki?
No, I mean, we've talked about, you know, that's the beauty of some of us serving on the committees that handle these different bills, is we get to take several looks at them and think about different things. I mean, the policy direction that you have to think about is does our current system of electing or not reelecting representatives suffice on the actions they take while they're here? And the second question is, should the legislature be able to trump the voters in their initiative process? I mean, that's what it comes down to. And I struggle with the second one more than the first one, but I do struggle with the second question. Right now, there's a way in our Constitution for voters to say, you know what, you 60 people down there that are not listening to us, we disagree with your action or your inability to provide adequate action, and we're going to initiate something through the initiative process, and they don't have to ask our permission. It becomes law, and it remains law for 2 years before we can change it. They're giving up those rights. The people are giving up substantial rights in this bill. They're gaining some that they already have. They already have the right to, through referendum, to make a law of ours go away. But I think they're giving up more than the legislators are in this bill, and that's where I struggle. I fundamentally believe, no matter how pesky it can be, no matter how difficult it's been in the state of California that has created so many ridiculous laws that make it a very troubling place to do business, it is ultimately the people's right, and I feel like they're losing more than the legislators are in this bill. So I don't know how much you want to talk about that. I have other logic that's been kicking around in my mind about how this changes behavior of legislators, how it changes behavior of the people. But, Madam Chair, that's why I struggle with moving forward on this.
Okay, thank you. When you're looking at just the front half, where you're giving the people the ability to override the legislature, can you tell us these other places you mentioned that have such laws, how is it typically worked? Have the voters typically, the legislature passes a tax, or the local municipality passes a tax? What happens? Are the voters usually turning those down, or do they sometimes approve them? Can you just speak to that?
Madam Chair, Mike Barnhill, I can't speak exhaustively on the experience of other states, but I did look at Colorado, since the Colorado provision really is the inspiration for this provision. And my understanding is in Colorado, which amended their constitution in 1992, has had approximately a dozen new taxes or increases to taxes go to the people for consideration after the legislature made the enactment. And in two of the cases, the voters approved. Maybe the second one could be characterized as two separate ones, but the voters in 2004 approved an increase to the tobacco tax, and then in 2012 the voters approved a marijuana tax, and then in either 2013 or 14, the voters approved an increase to the marijuana tax. So roughly a dozen measures went to the voters for approval. Two or three were approved.
Okay, thank you. This was just good background information. Are there any other questions at this point? I appreciate Senator Michicki bringing up the point that he did. I did also want to point out that when we talked a little bit earlier, it may have been before you stepped in, the fact that the legislature could or could not call a joint chamber. They would probably only call it if they plan to approve it, but by not holding one, it's a de facto disapproval, so they are, in essence, not voting. However, you don't know how each individual member is thinking, so you don't really, it doesn't pin it to particular people, which is intriguing to think about. So I did not hear this in an earlier committee, so it has not been tossing around in my head like it has each of my colleagues on my left and right. So Senator Kiel, do you have any further questions before we set this aside?
Just briefly, Madam Chair, thank you. The other two that I wanted to sort of put out there to think about as we look at revisions, one would be whether changing who or what is subject to an existing tax, whether that would trigger this. And I think there's a bill in the House that would expand who must pay the other tobacco products excise tax, or rather the products to which it applies. I'm not sure if that's establishment, increase, or just amendment that doesn't trigger this. The other...
why don't we get the answer to that one first?
No, okay.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Kiel, that sounds like a change in an exemption. Change in an exemption from a tax. That would not, the intent here is that would not trigger a vote of the people. Okay. It's a tax that exists. So if that answers your question.
Senator Kiel?
Thank you. The other two, the marijuana industry has asked some legislators to rework how the tax they pay is applied and apply it at a different point. And of course, the proposal they envision is a net neutral. And so I don't know how restructuring a tax would apply with this proposal. And then the other question I had is that we have a couple of things, one I can think of in particular at the moment, on the books where the legislature could potentially alter the effective rate of a tax through the appropriation process. There is a proposal, I think, that has come up to change a piece of our oil tax system. Might have come up more than once. and whether that, while not nominally changing the rate, would have the effect of triggering this as written.
And so, Madam Chair, just to reiterate what Mr. Milk said, the intention is if the legislature establishes a new tax or increases the statutory rate of a tax, that triggers this. Anything else does not. And so going back to the exemption example that Mr. Milks mentioned a moment ago, that would not trigger this. And there's also fairly recent precedent in the state of Colorado where the court was asked to consider some changes to the law that increased the rate indirectly on a certain class of people, and they said does not trigger the Tabor provisions. So the intention here is you change a statutory rate, it triggers a vote. You change a bunch of things about the statute that indirectly increases the rate, does not trigger a vote.
Okay. Senator Michicki.
I think that would be a fun one to argue in a court of law, and I'm not sure I agree with you. I think you can become very clever with dramatically changing a rate by changing exemptions. You can include a whole new class of taxpayers without changing a rate, which would dramatically establish a tax. You'd be establishing a tax by changing the exemption. So I don't agree that you can boilerplate that answer. I think that'd be on a case-by-case basis.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, I understand your statement. I guess here's what we're doing is explaining what the intent of the language is right now as presented, is that a new tax created or a change in the rate, statutory rate, would trigger this provision for vote to the people, not a change in exemptions or deductions that could have changed the effective payment. That's an explanation of what this language provides. Of course, as the matter goes through the legislature, like all things, the resolution can be modified.
So I would be curious along those lines, and that you may need to come back to us on this, if the administration would be open to a change that if something were to effectively impact the tax rate, such as changing a deduction, should that be included? Does this need to be fixed to include a case such as that?
Madam Chair, well, we're happy to engage in the discussion. As with anything involving the Constitution, what we're trying to do is strike a balance between specificity and generality that works constitutionally. And we can load up the Constitution with a lot of detail and specificity, but then it stops being a Constitution and it's more a statute. And so that's the balance in drafting. We're here to explain what the drafters intended. We recognize there's anxiety about the lack of precision in constitutional terms, and we're happy to engage in the discussion further. But there's absolutely a tension that we're trying to strike a balance on.
I understand that. Senator Schauer.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think you just drilled on it right as I was asking the question as you started talking. As we have bantered this around the previous committee, we discussed this, and that's one of the concerns, is that when we write language, is it at the 60,000-foot view of the Constitution level, or is it in the weeds that is becoming statutory language as we start to write? And I fear that some of the things we get into start to create a constitution that looks like a bill with a lot of statutory shalls, mays, don'ts, and I think that's one of the things we have to be very careful of, is staying as general as possible on ideas. The Constitution is more of our idea document. Our laws are the specificity documents that define, statutes and the things we do. So I think that's one of our concerns. You look at the Constitution, I read it just the other day on Monday. Where's the power derived from? The power is derived from the people. All power is derived from the people. The government doesn't have any inherent power. It's all given to it by the people. So everything we do needs to have a flavor of protecting the rights and the power of the people in this process. And I think that's where you see a little bit of concern when we get too specific, is are we limiting their power? Does this go the other direction when the people have an initiative process and you go, now you can make a tax law? and then the legislature can kill it. It's like, have we done something that goes too far and we're starting to touch those very top-level ideas of what the Constitution was meant to protect? So this is not necessarily a question, gentlemen, but like I said, I wanted to get that on the record because I think this is where some of the struggle is are we getting too specific in the process of some of these constitutional amendments and starting to become more statutory in language, or are we staying to the top level where we are just merely drafting constitutional language that then allows everyone to do their job? But I think that's, you're going to find that struggle here as we go through it, is how do we protect the rights of the people, because we're just representatives of the people. And sometimes I think we usurp a bit too much power in the process, and we need to be very careful that whatever we craft stays at the appropriate level and does not limit that power. So anyways, for the record.
Thank you. Yep. Through the chair, just to address the comments of both Senator Schauer and Michicki, they're both fair comments. And we are more than happy to engage with the committee to see if there's a better balance that we can strike. But I do want to acknowledge the fairness of both sets of comments.
Thank you, Mr. Barnhill. Mr. Milks, do you have a comment on that?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I have.
Senator Michicki?
Just to put it in a nutshell, right now the people have the right to strike anything done by the legislature other than an appropriation through referendum process. Right now they have that right. They have the right that we're making believe we're introducing in this bill. This makes it automatic. Right now the people of Alaska have the right through an initiative to pass a law that we can't strike. This would allow us to strike a law by the people. So they're not gaining a new right. It's just an automatic process. They're not gaining a new right through this bill, but they are losing a big one. So I don't know if anyone's thought through that. Sounds fair. Sounds like they get something, that the legislature gets something. Not that we are the legislature, or the people are the legislature. Legislature are the people, but some folks like to draw a line between the two. That's where I struggle with this the most. If something happens that they don't like, they can strike it. They collect a few signatures, a very low bar, and put it on the ballot, yes or no. But the initiative part is the part where they couldn't have six senators, like you said, would actually control the entire legislature, because they would not meet if they didn't want something to pass. The six senators, the majority of a 11-member majority, could be the ones keeping initiated law from occurring. So I'm saying that for the record, because I want people to hear that. This sounds great. This sounds like they're really getting something. They can really control the legislature, except they already can. And this passes on a right of theirs that has been there since the beginning of statehood, that they would be giving up pretty substantial. Something for them to think about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not seeing any other hands raised at this point. So we've got a lot to think about. Thank you for the presentation today, Mr. Milks and Mr. Barnhill.
Thank you.
So we're going to set this bill aside at this time. Thank you, gentlemen. If the committee members have any amendments they'd like to offer for SJR 4, I ask that you please have them to my office by 10 a.m. on Friday, April 5th. A reminder for committee members and the public that we will be taking public testimony on SJR tonight at 6 p.m. And seeing no other business before the committee, we are adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 2:38.
Hey, Taylor, can you hear
Hello.
Me? Testifier 1?
Yeah, testifier sounds loud and clear.
Testifier 2, mic check.
Also good.
Microphone check, 1, 2.
That one is good.
Microphone check, 1, 2.
Also good.
Chair check, 1-2.
Chair microphone good.
Microphone check, 1-2.
That one's good.
Microphone check, 1-2.
And that one's good as well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, have a good meeting.
Good evening. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd. Let the record reflect the time is 6:04 p.m. Today we have present Senator Michicki and myself, Chair Hughes. I'd like to remind committee members and those in the audience to please silence or turn off your cell phones. Thank you for those assisting us this evening and staying late. We appreciate that. We have one item on the agenda. We'll hold public testimony on Senate Joint Resolution 4, Constitutional Amendment, State Tax. This initiative is sponsored by the governor. We are going to set a time limit of a minute, but I'm going to be a little lenient because we have relatively few callers. So if those testifying, if you would please first state on the record, after your name, your support or opposition to this constitutional amendment, I would greatly appreciate it. You may also send your testimony to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. Are there any questions before we begin, Senator Michicki?
No, Madam Chair. I think folks have been waiting. Sorry that we had other meetings running a bit over, but thanks for holding up for us.
You are welcome. And so with that, we will open public testimony. The first one online is calling in from Fox, and it's Lynette Clark. Welcome, Ms. Clark, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. And if, when you begin your testimony, if you'd please indicate your support or opposition for the SJR 4, it would be great. Thanks.
Thank you. My name is Lynette Clark. I live in Fox, Alaska, and I am absolutely, completely, 100% behind SJR 4. The last 4 years and a couple of sessions prior to that, Alaskans got their fill of being ignored. And that's when the trust in both houses started to diminish considerably because we weren't being listened to. I read SJR4, that will put more power into Alaskans' hands as opposed to these special interests that are wailing and crying and gnashing their teeth. But more power in what Article 1, Section 1 and 2 means, and that is the people are the ones that are in charge. I want their hands out of our pockets. I want a realistic budget. I want SJR 4 and SJR 5 passed. It's time to turn Alaska around. In 2018, we changed a lot of what was going on in the House and the Senate. And in 2020, there's going to be more changes because those that are against Article 1, Section 1 and 2 are showing their colors. And that's going to come up in the elections in 2020. The issue of trust is appalling in this state. We cannot believe in our government any longer. We have to be able to have our hands more on their pocketbooks and their purse strings in order to secure a firm financial footing for the state of Alaska and to restore the trust of our population into both houses of this state. I don't include the current governor's administration in mistrust. I think he's exactly the man for the job. And I think that a lot of the House and the legislature has both houses in the legislature have to wake up and smell the coffee. I've said it before, the desserts have all been eaten. It's time now to clean up the mess. And SJR 4 will be very assistive in that potential. I thank you all for the work you've been doing. I've been following it on 360 North. And I do appreciate your obvious through your comments support of a lot of what we're talking about. Thank you very much, and I will close with I have full support for that resolution. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ms. Clark, for joining us this evening. Next, from Kenai, Christine Hutchinson. Please state your name for the record and indicate initially before you proceed with your testimony either your support or your opposition, please, to SJR 4.
This is Christine Hutchinson. I'm in Kenai, and I want to sign on with what much of what the lady from Fox, Alaska, said. I guess that's where she's from, was Fox. I'd like to sign on with what she said. She's absolutely correct. And this way we can help the legislature down to the very citizen. We can help the legislature make those tough decisions to cut the spending. I support what Governor Dunleavy is doing, and I realize that it's an uphill battle when all of this moves to the House. And I recognize the source of that. It appears it can't be helped at this time. But in the meantime, I appreciate your efforts to move this out of the committee onto the floor and support it to a vote of the people. Thank you to our Senator Machinki here in this area and to anybody else sitting there listening to this testimony. It's got to be grueling. Thank you very much. I'm full support. You guys have a great evening.
Thank you, Ms. Hutchinson. Appreciate you joining us. Now in Soldotna, Mark Sesler. Mr. Sesler, please state your name for the record, and before you proceed with your testimony, please at the front and indicate your support or opposition for SJR 4.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Mark Sesler. I'm calling you from Soldotna. I am in favor for a yes for SJR 4. I was listening in on the lady from Fox in Alaska. Boy, basically ripped off what I wanted to say. We need the people to take back our state from special interests. Our politicians right now, we can't trust. They run on one thing, and then when they get down to Juneau, they turn around and do another. Yes, 2020 will have consequences from politicians that are showing their true color at this point. We as Alaska put Dunleavy in there for a reason, and we want the man to succeed. We got basically shafted by Walker pretty hard, so that's what I'm there for. Yes on JR4. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mark, for joining us. And now from Anchorage, Noria Clark, please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
I am in favor. I definitely believe that. Noria Clark, November Oscar Romeo, India Alpha. Last name Charlie Lima Alpha Romeo Kilo. I am definitely in support of this. We have an egregious amount of waste of money that has been spent in the state, and we continue to do so, especially in Anchorage, and I'm sure pretty much every municipality here or every borough here. We really need to stand behind the politicians who we decided to vote in to make sure that they would protect us. You know, many of us have become complacent, and many of us have become comfortable because we felt like after we voted these people in, everything would be okay. Unfortunately, there is still a fight behind us, and what it is to support the governor. We have put practice behind him for a certain reason. To tax people, and I can tell you this coming from a state that has a lot of taxes, being from Arizona, it will not be useful. Drug dealers do not pay taxes. We need to support our governor. We have to focus on what our fight is. And the fight is right now, people, anybody who's listening, is boots on the ground.
Thank you, Ms.
So
Clark.
I appreciate all of your time, and thank you so much for hearing me out. And Governor Dunleavy, I definitely appreciate you. Thank you so much for working towards this.
Thank you, Ms. Clark, for joining us this evening. We're going to Chugiak, Karen Perry. Please state your name for the record and let us know your support or opposition, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Karen Perry from Chugiak, and my husband, Rod, is also here, and he will be testifying after me. And I am in full support of SJR 4. We are a Dunleavy strong family. Seniors are living on fixed incomes. Inflation rate keeps going up, and legislators think they can go down there and steal our PFD and raise taxes and making slaves of us all. We are tired of the wasteful spending and taking from many to benefit a few. So I am full support of SJR4, and Lynette Clark covered all the points I could possibly make. So that concludes my testimony, and here's my husband, Rod, R-O-D-P-E-R-R-Y.
Yeah, hi, this is Rod. I'm totally behind SJR4.
Thank you both, Rod and Karen, for your testimony this evening. We appreciate hearing
from
you.
Thank you, Shelley. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next, Soldotna, Ken Brown, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the front of your testimony whether you support or oppose SJR 4, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. This is Ken Brown, and I support SJR 4, and I couldn't have said it any better than the first caller and everyone since then, so I'm going to leave it at that and give some more other people more time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ken. From Soldotna, Gail Limbaugh-Moore, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR, and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, this is Gail Limbaugh-Moore, and I am in full support of SJR 4, and that will conclude my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate the brevity and the clarity. Next, we'll go to Fairbanks, Shoshana Kun. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, please, and give your testimony. Shoshana, can you hear me? Do you need to take your phone off mute? We're not here.
Yes, I apologize about that. Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
All right, Shoshana Kuhn, Fairbanks, Alaska. I am in opposition of this resolution. Passing this resolution means that it would be tying the hands of anyone at a borough level or a city level in a possibility to consider a sales tax as a form of revenue. This would essentially deplete funds and close a potential source of revenue. I cannot support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kuhn. We appreciate your testimony this evening. Next, we'll go to Kasiloff, Suzanne Denzin. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record. Indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, please, and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, this is Susan Denzin from Kasiloff. I'm in favor of Mr. Dunvalizi's SJR 4, and I believe everyone needs to get their budgets in all departments under control and be more efficient. We also need to get the drilling going for the gas and the oil for more revenue to bring into this state. And the assembly needs to work when they're down there so that they don't have to have this extra pay, because it's gonna end up hurting them in the ballot box sooner or later. But I am in favor of this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. From Big Lake, Lynn McCabe, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4 before proceeding with your testimony, please.
Hi, this is Lynn McCabe calling from Big Lake. I fully support SJR 4. We are supposed to be a representative government, and without our input, our representatives may only represent their own perspectives or those of the people wandering the halls where they work. Giving us the ability to vote on any taxation means that legislators will need to convince the public as to why more money is needed. It will get us, more of us, involved in the process. Again, I support SJR 4 and the opportunity that it will allow us to vote on a constitutional amendment for taxation to be approved by the voters.
Thank you, Ms. McCabe. Next, we'll go to Willie Keppel. Welcome, Willie, to Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Willie Keppel. I live in Quinnahawk, 450 miles due west of Anchorage on the Bering Sea. I fully support SJR 4. I support Governor Dunleavy. I'd like to remind you, in 1776, we kicked King George out because we had no representation for taxation. I'm for cut. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Keppel, for joining us this evening. From Fairbanks, Julie Smith, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Julie Smith. I'm from the Fairbanks area. I'm calling because I oppose SJR 4. I'm probably messing up all the letters. But I oppose it because we already have a system in place that makes it easy for, like, the cities or the boroughs or municipals to make taxes and whatnot. And I have a lot of questions, and I think that we just need more time to sit down and look at all this to make sure that it'll all be done properly the first time. Okay? So, again, I oppose. I also oppose the budget and many other things, but I oppose this. So please vote up.
Thank you, Julie, for joining us and providing your input. Next is James Squire. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Mr. Squires, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, indicating at the front end your support or opposition to SJR 4.
Yeah, my name is James Squires. I am from rural Deltona. I am speaking for myself and my wife, Pam Good. That's two. I support SJR 4. I was listening to House Finance Budget Amendments all day today, and we definitely need SJR 4 as a result of everything I heard today. So I adamantly support SJR 4. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, James, for joining us. From Juneau, Mitchell Sharman, and I don't see you in the room, so I think you're calling in. Mitchell, please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution before proceeding with the rest of your testimony.
My name is Mitchell Sharman, S-H-A-R-M-A-N, and I support the SJR 4. I think there's other ways to make the prisons pay for themselves and other things where the budget, I think, should be cut a lot. The prisoners don't seem to be, the criminals don't seem to be afraid of anything, and they certainly have recently burgled. And anyway, I support SDR 4. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony this evening. Also in Juneau, calling in, Marsha Mueller Sharman. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Marsha, please state your name for the record to indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
I support it. My name is Marsha Mueller Sharman.
Do you support or oppose SJR 4?
I support SJR 4.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. In Homer, Alex Coplin. Welcome, Alex, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, hi. My name is Alex Coplin, K-O-P-L-I-N. I'm currently in Fairbanks, but I reside in Homer. I oppose this initiative, SJR 4. I feel that we have to create some other sources of revenue, and we don't need to keep waiting. I work out all over Alaska, and many people from out of state come here. We know that. We know that there's revenue we can generate from that. We can make a fair tax system. The legislators that we voted for, I don't always agree, but I support them in making decisions that will make Alaska healthy. Right now, with the present conditions we are facing, we see all these cuts, and I truly don't understand why people don't want to increase the budget. Cutting is not working. We have revenue that we can look at. The taxing is healthy because it puts skin in the game for everybody. And the longer we wait, the longer the problem escalates. And we need to address it sooner than later. And I'm sorry if the legislators were.
Thank you for your testimony. And now we're moving to John Lamborn out of Wasilla. Welcome, Mr. Lamborn, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, indicate your support or opposition to SJR4, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
This is John Lamborn and my wife, Caroline, too. We both support SJR4. We'd like to see Alaskans given more say in what goes on in government. We elect politicians, and they go to Juneau, and then they don't live by the mandate that's been given them by their voters. So we support this, and we support the governor's plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lamborn. In Juneau, calling in is Kathy Swanson. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please indicate your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR4 before giving your testimony, please.
Hello, my name is Kathy Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N, and I support SJR4. The reason being is that I don't think the taxpayers get nearly enough input in what they're getting taxed for. So I think this would be a really great amendment, and I hope it goes through.
Thank you, Ms.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson. And now to Bob Swanson. Please state your name for the record, indicate your support or opposition to the resolution, and then your testimony, please.
Yes, hi, good evening. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you all. My name is Bob, B-O-B, and in Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N. I'm going to support SJR4. It is my firm belief that you can never tax your way into prosperity. It just hasn't worked in the past, and it's not going to work in the future. We are a natural resource state, and we have plenty of natural resources that can be used to offset the budget deficit. As for instance, in Juneau, we're sitting right on top of a gold mine, and it's not being utilized. So there's other creative ways that we need to come up with to solve the deficit problem that we have. I believe firmly that Governor Dan Levy is right when he says that, you know, throwing more money at stuff doesn't solve the problem as in education. I'm a firm supporter of education, but my God, we've got the number one per capita expenditure for students in the nation, and we're like the second from the bottom in student successful outcomes. So I think we just need to be more creative and find different ways, because what has not worked in the past is going to continue to not work. And I think that we just need to have more of an understanding of why we're being taxed and what kind of taxes. So I'm totally in support of SJR4. And thanks for the opportunity to testify. I appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Swanson. Out of North Pole, Christina Sinclair, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR4 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
My name is Christina Sinclair, S-I-N-C-L-A-I-R, out of North Pole, and I would like to testify again, so no. I believe this because we have elected people into these positions, and it is their job to do this for us. That is basically it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sinclair. We appreciate hearing from you. From Anchorage, Sabrina Martino, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and then indicate your support or opposition to SJR4, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Martino, and I'm calling in favor of the governor's proposed amendment, SJR4. I believe that the people should have a say whether or not that we are going to get taxed on things. I don't think that the legislative body has listened to the people, and I think this gives us more of a voice. So I definitely support SJR4. And our government, our governor's plan for budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Sabrina. Next, out of Fairbanks, Lindsay Wyatt. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR4, and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. I am in support of SJR4. I do support Governor Dunleavy's bill there. I just don't think we should have any kind of state tax. without the people's vote on it. If you're sure this is the way to go, then put it out and let the people vote on it. If not, that's fine too. But I don't think the legislature should just pass bills saying you folks have to pay, because you don't know if the folks have the capability to pay to start with, but you still want to put it on them. And that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this evening. Robbie Douglas from North Pole, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. And at the beginning of your testimony, if you could please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, please.
Yes, this is Robbie Douglas, North Pole. I agree with SJR 4 that we should have this amendment. Seems to me it's pretty obvious we can't trust our elected officials to pay attention to we, the people. They certainly like to spend enough time talking to lobbyists, and one of them makes over $1 million a year. I only make $13,000 a year. I have no chance of arguing against the millionaire. So, yes on SJR 4. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robbie. We appreciate you joining this evening. Next, we will go to Hayden Neville in Fairbanks. Welcome, Hayden, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and then indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or resolution, your support or opposition to the resolution, please.
Thank you. My name is Hayden Neville, calling from Fairbanks, and I am against SJR 4. Our legislators are elected by us, the people, and we ask them to make difficult decisions on our behalf to help keep our state healthy. And there are so many complex decisions that go into whether or not we need to have a new tax to raise revenue, that we need people who are fully engaged in that type of work to be able to make the best decisions. And it doesn't mean they're going to necessarily tax the people who can't afford it. They know that. They want to, they'll be, if there is a tax, it's going to be on places that can't afford it because our state needs the revenue. So this amendment would cripple our state. It would prevent our lawmakers from raising revenue if they need it, if we have to do it to help keep our state healthy. So I'm against SJR 4. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this evening. From Big Lake, Hootling, I'm not sure if I pronounced your last name correctly. Please correct me if I'm wrong when you state your name for the record, please. And then at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4.
My name is Bert Hootling. I'm 100% for SJR 4. We need to get our spending here in Alaska under control. I think the people, the way our Constitution is set up, you guys in government are supposed to be responsible to us, the people. This will give the power back to the people to dictate whether or not new taxes are necessary or not, just not on the whim of government, because you can't reduce the spending you've got going on there in Juneau. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert, for joining us this evening. In Fairbanks, Abigail Stessen. Please state your name for the record, Abigail, and then proceed with your testimony indicating your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning, please.
Hi, my name is Abigail Stephan. I'm in Fairbanks, and I am in opposition to this amendment because, like others before me have stated, I agree that we elected our officials to represent us, and this amendment goes against that completely. So that's all I want to say, but in opposition of the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. And at this time, I'm not seeing anyone else online. We're going to wait for 5 minutes and see if anyone else joins us. And if not, then we will adjourn. So I'll take an at ease, and we'll see if we get any more callers. And we're back on the record. We gave 5 more minutes to give to see if there's anyone else who was going to call in. So we'll listen to these last callers, and then we will be adjourning. So thank you, James Santoro from Anchorage, for joining us. Please state your name for the record. And at the beginning of your testimony, if you could please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4, and then proceed with the rest of your testimony, please.
Okay, my name's James Santoro. I'm from Anchorage, and I oppose SJR 4. I think we all have to pay taxes, and no one likes to pay them. But this legislation seems like it's like divide and conquer, and wants to split up Alaskans. Nobody likes to pay, but we have to, and that's why we elect our legislatures to make these hard choices. And I just want to say I oppose this, and I oppose most of Governor Dunleavy's proposal so far. It seems like he just wants to separate us, and I don't think that's what this state's about. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, James, for your testimony. And we have Travis Cole calling in from Fairbanks. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, and at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4.
Hello. Hi, my name is Tristan Globa. I am from Fairbanks, Alaska, right? And I'm opposed to the amendments as proposed. I've been talking to a lot of community members about the budget and hearing at a lot of town halls the willingness to explore a number of revenue-creating options. And from what I can tell, I don't hear much support for constraining the flexibility of our legislators in solving our fiscal problems. So from that perspective, I don't think that adding barriers to our ability to raise revenue is all appropriate for the sort of dire fiscal crisis that we're in.
Thank you, Tristan, for your testimony. We appreciate it. I'm sorry you got the wrong name on the list. And so I am going to see if Travis Cole is now available. Travis, can you hear me?
Yes.
Travis, if you could.
Travis Cole, and I'm opposed to it. Because as a tax-paying person who elects the is a voter who helps elect the people, the legislator, I think the legislator is the voice of the people, and a lot of the support I've seen of, you know, us being able to speak on our behalf of what is necessary in Alaska is going through our legislator, and, you know, I oppose all of this governor's approach to just cutting everything and this would be taking away that power from the legislator to being able to voice what we want, what we support. So I oppose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole, for joining us this evening. Tristan Sinclair from North Pole, please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 4 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Tristan Sinclair. I'm from North Pole, and I oppose this measure because we were created as, our state was created as a constitutional republic for a reason. The people cannot learn and educate themselves well enough on these issues in order to vote well. We pay money for the legislators to do this for us, and I would hope that you would oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sinclair. Eric Muehling from Fairbanks, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition for the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Eric Muehling, Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm just fine with respect to SR4. I am opposed to this constitutional amendment, which would limit the legislative power and restrict the ability of the legislature to raise and spend money. That's their job. Let them do their job. That's the appropriate role of the legislature. This is a strong no to this proposed constitutional amendment. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, Mr. Muehling. Out of Ketchikan, welcome Ron Howard to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. My full name is Ronald Howard, Jr. I'm calling from Ketchikan, and I strongly support SJR 4, the constitutional amendment, would give a up or down vote by the people for new taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Howard.
You.
Are you finished?
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm seeing no one else online. Is anyone in the room like to testify? I'm going to close public testimony at this time. Senator Michiki. Did you have some comments you'd like to make?
No, Madam Chair. I was just going. Were they supposed to sign up by 7? Is that?
Oh no, actually, we did not require that this time. So that's why we gave the 5-minute waiting period, and we did get some extra callers during that time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for having to step out for, I think, 5 callers. I had a call-in with our school district, but I appreciate everyone calling in tonight and you holding public testimony on SJR4.
And thank you for coming. And Senator Michicki, when he returned, he did look at my notes, so he knew that the testifiers he didn't hear, he did get a record of what they said. So with that, seeing no further comments or no other business before the committee, we will adjourn at 6:42 p.m.